Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya, guselkumab, can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
If your small business is booming and ready to expand, you might say something like,
"It's happening!
Booyah!
Yeah! Crushed it."
But if you need someone who can actually help protect your growing business, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And just like that, your State Farm agent can help you get the coverage you need for your new space. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I wouldn't do that because that would be in the
Then why can't I say noughties?
Because that's too vague.
And again,
he just said 80s.
Quizmaster discretion.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
U.S. Sport
on Off the Ball
with 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Well, 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 well. Keane, I think you called all the four out of four. Were you right? Am I right? Did you get four?
No, I got one wrong.
What one did you get wrong? Oh, the Bills.
Last night.
Ah, okay. So, well, it's Saquon Barkley's world, and we're just living in it.
Or I've that for years, sure.
Or it's Jaden Daniels' world, and we're just living in it. And we're going to see the two of them up against each other next week.
I think the problem with that is suggesting that Jaden Daniels is part of this world, because I don't know what the hell he's doing right now. It does not seem human. Saquon Barkley, you mentioned there, we should really give him a mention, because we do tend to wind up talking about the quarterbacks as much as we have talked about him this year. He now has 360 plus yard runs this season against the Rams. 360 plus yard runs in a season is like, not unheard of, but it's a pretty damn good season. And he's done it against one team in two games. I do feel very badly for the Rams in that game, though. Like, Mick, I know we were kind of watching this at the same time and kind of reacting in similar ways, that it was a great game. And it was a really great game. But it was also kind of ruined a little bit by the snow. I'm kind of being the hater here, because everyone loves the snow game and the visuals of it are amazing. And yeah, you have to play in those conditions. But it did feel like Matthew Stafford was going to bring them back and win that game with them, and it's just the snow, as much as anything, is what prevented them from going down and snatching the win and getting out of Philadelphia against the quarterback who was again walking that line of, are you good or are you not good, are you hurt or are you healthy? It's that constant question with Jalen Hurts still exists, you know.
Yeah, couldn't disagree more. Who won more games this season, Philadelphia or the Rams?
You know, no, I'm not saying that they should have. I'm just saying based on how the game developed.
I'm sure if it wasn't raining, though, or if it wasn't snowing so badly, Hurts would have thrown for more than 150 yards. Maybe 175 or something. You know, it's like, it just, yeah, it did suit the Eagles more, I think. And obviously, Williams' fumbles, I suppose, are probably the bigger issue in terms of why that game got away from them, or seemed like it was getting away from them until they kind of managed to drag it back towards the end. But yeah, it's definitely the weather dominated the game. It was brilliant to watch all the way through. It was just one piece. It had that nice blend, I think, Keane, between drama for drama's sake and drama for, wow, there's some brilliant football happening here as well.
I thought Sean McVay's line at the end as well kind of fed into that of, oh, I didn't even consider a situation where we weren't going to go down and score a touchdown. And he kind of had that level of confidence in his quarterback, and I was probably thinking the same way. And then that Jalen Carter sack, he comes through the middle, the centre looks the wrong way, it's a very simple thing, and Jalen Carter's so fast, so quick, at his size as well. Stafford can do nothing, just fall over on third down, get sacked, and now they're too far behind the down and distance to get that final conversion. But even when he let the ball go, speaking to your point, even when Stafford let the ball go to try and hit that out route to, I think it was Nacua, you're kind of thinking, oh, he's there, it's there, it's there, it's there. And then it just drifts over the side, and you're kind of like, oh, that was a big anti-climax. But Carter, I mentioned him there, you have to give him massive credit. That fumble, I know the conditions obviously played a big role in the fumbles, but that first fumble from Kyren Williams, I think it was the first one, where he punches the ball out, it's one of the better punch-outs you're going to see. And he just, like, he's such a freak. They had a little bit in the game where they were explaining he's been double-teamed on this many plays, and on those plays, the Eagles haven't got any pressure. When he hasn't been double-teamed, he's basically gotten the quarterback's face in every single play. Mm-hmm. So he's taken two every single time, and it's going to be a massive thing for the Commanders next week to try and figure out how to work around it.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I know I've never heard anybody who listens to the show or many people in general credit Sky Sports' coverage, but they do have Ndamukong Suh all the way through the playoffs. And he actually made a great point on the replay, because they kind of showed Williams looking up, and he goes, as a defensive lineman, and he's as well equipped to talk about it as anyone in the history of the game, says, like, this is your chance, is the early part of the run, because the running back is looking up and looking for lanes, and this is the point of the run where the ball is at its most vulnerable. You know, the protection isn't there, and it was right at that moment, and you could just see in the frame that Williams is kind of looking around him, and in comes Carter. And it's brilliant watching these games as well, I think, for those of us kind of red zone fans, Ger, and, you know, fantasy players and everything like that. It was like, when it does come to the playoffs, you do get such more of an appreciation for the likes of a Zach Bond or a James.
He's not racking up fantasy stats, you mean? Yeah.
You know, yeah, exactly. But also, you're seeing them every down. So you're seeing, like, Will Anderson on Saturday. You just see how much impact they have on the game, rather than just seeing their highlights when it kind of goes to that game, when they're getting the sack or whatever. You're seeing how much pressure they get on constantly. And it's actually great to kind of watch the defensive side of things as much as you watch the offensive.
Do you want to talk more about this game, or are we going to talk about this game more in the context of the preview of next week? Because I think watching some of the early bits, they were talking about the athleticism of the offensive line for the Eagles. And I do wonder, is there one of the Kelseys at least who'd be like, did I have another year? Did I have another couple of years of me? Could I still be there?
It doesn't seem like they need him that much. To be honest, the only thing I was really wondering about this game is if AJ Brown switched to a Kindle because of the weather and on the sideline, because the book would have, like, got a bit messy, wouldn't it, and fallen apart a little bit. The offensive line, Chris Collinsworth said this during the game. Every game I think it was Chris Collinsworth, I may have got the comment wrong, whichever. So he said this during the game, every time you do an Eagles game, you wind up talking about the offensive line. And every time we do this podcast and talk about the Eagles, we wind up talking about the offensive line and the defensive line, to be true. Like, they're just so good. And it's an area of emphasis for Howie Roseman over the years. And, like, the Eagles have sustained this consistency in competing in the playoffs. And now you can say they've won one Super Bowl. They haven't, like, dominated or anything. And that's true. But they've won one Super Bowl without ever really having a high-end franchise quarterback. Like, Jalen Hurts is the best that they've had, and we're all kind of agreeing that he's not one of the star quarterbacks. And how have they done that? They've done that by investing in the right areas, by being really, really smart in their player evaluation, by getting these freak athletes on the offensive line, a guy like Lane Johnson. I think Landon Dickerson is there as well at the moment. The names change every so often, but the quality of the performance never seems to change. And they were just able to bully the Rams defensive front in a way that the team last week, who they played, or the Vikings, couldn't last week. So that kind of sets its own. And then you add in Hurts with that run, the 46-yard touchdown at the start of the game, that where he broke those two tackles. That kind of looked like it was going to be a bit of a blowout at that stage. So they're a really, really difficult team to match up to. And you mentioned next week's game. That's the real fascinating element here, because they played twice in the regular season already. The Commanders struggled and won, and then they won the other. The other was with Kenny Pickett at quarterback, the one that the Eagles lost, but they still scored 30-plus points in that game, and it primarily comes down to the weapons they've got, but also the offensive line there, just giving the quarterback clean pockets and great running lanes all the time.
Who would have thought the NFC East was the most competitive division of football, the best division in the world.
The NFC North, with the three best teams in the NFC, none of them are left.
It's all mad, isn't it?
It's pretty bad. Like, I don't know how many of us stayed up and watched live, but when you're watching the game the next day, and it's basically impossible these days not to see spoilers, and you're kind of watching the game, and we're moving on to Washington here, I suppose, if we're talking about the NFC East and its dominance. Like, Washington were brilliant, and Jaden Daniels is incredible, and his all the things we talked about in previous weeks, his poise, the moment never gets to him. He makes really, really good decisions, and he makes the big plays when they need to be made as well. So there's absolutely no credit taken away whatsoever from Washington. We were watching that game knowing that Washington are going to win this game by like 15 points. And you're like, how the hell are Detroit not? You know what I mean? It's like they had everything in their hands the entire way through the game, really. It was one of the more strange scorelines versus gameplay games that I could ever remember.
I am one of those people who've stayed up to watch this game live because, as you can probably tell by looking at me, it was a long weekend, but it was worthwhile this weekend because it always is. I think it was the early second quarter or late first quarter. Sam Cosmi, who is Washington's best offensive line, tore his ACL, done for the game, obviously done next week as well. And everything had gone fairly well for Washington up until that point. Cliff Kingsbury called an absolutely insane fourth and one play, as he tends to do. That killed one of their early drives where Marcus Mariota was faking a quarterback sneak and then trying to pitch it back to Jaden Daniels running outside. But Brian Robinson didn't know the play, so he ran into him and it was just a complete mess. Beyond that, everything had gone Washington's way. But once they lost Cosmi, it felt like, oh, This is where it starts now. This is where the Lions take over and everything just goes in the right direction because now the defensive line will actually be able to get a little bit more pass rush, a little bit more contained. And it just didn't matter what they did. Jaden Daniels had the solution for everything. There's one throw he hits on a crossing route to Dyami Brown where there's two defenders shutting him down and falling on top of him at the top of his drop. And Dyami Brown isn't really open, but he still manages to loop the ball incredibly high into the air purposefully to get over the defender beneath him and still keep it in front of the safety coming over the top. And once he hit that play, it was like, oh, yeah, there's only one way this game is going because you have a quarterback there who can do anything to beat you, and then you have a quarterback on the other side who is doing, unfortunately, what he's done in the past and collapsing on himself in the playoffs, although I will say some of his mistakes definitely weren't his fault.
So explain how they managed to overcome the better team, it sounds like what you're saying, Mick.
It's not even that. It's more like turnovers were obviously the key, and that's on the Lions. It's also fair play to Washington for forcing them. It was the fact, like, you know, there's something to be said for the fact that that Washington and Daniels kept hold of the ball and played that part of the game brilliantly. Like, it's not to say that they're a better team. It's more that when you're watching it, you're thinking, like, God, Jamar Gibbs can get 10 yards here anytime he wants. And then you start questioning, it's like, well, why aren't they using him more? You know, why did they went for a fourth down throw at one stage with an empty backfield? When, you know, Gibbs is there to run the ball and would have got it for you. So there was a lot of those kind of things where you're thinking, like, the Lions could have scored a lot more points. And I think, obviously, they gave away seven, I suppose, technically, but also given field position on the other turnovers, they gave away more as well. It wasn't just the defense to give up the 42. So, you know, it's not necessarily that they were better on the night. It's just that I feel like they could have been better. Like, I would question, there's the big sexy hire of the coaching thing this year. We spoke about it last week is Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator for the Lions, and he might go to the Raiders, whatever. And it's not to write him off because he does have some incredible plays and this offense has been really, really good and they've made Jared Goff probably look better than he is over the last while. But you do have to question in the biggest moments, like there was one play where they had Jameson Williams throw the ball and it was more that, like, it wasn't even a straightforward play. It wasn't even something that he could just, like, you're expecting far too much complex of him to figure out on the fly. And he obviously made the mistake that you could kind of foresee him doing. And you're like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing? This game is too important for this kind of crap, you know? So I wonder, does his stock fall a little bit?
They have something like 23 players out of contract this season as well. So I know they have all the injured players.
Closing slightly.
Yeah.
To be fair to him, I don't think the window's closing because most of those players aren't like part of their foundation and stuff like that. But this was a really big moment for them because they were the number one seed. They have $50 million in cap space going into next year. They have all their draft picks. The problem is, like, the real issue is can they improve a quarterback? And that's not going to happen because they're locked into the quarterback. I want to come back to that Jameson Williams play, though, that Mick just mentioned. That happened at the time. And look, there was a play earlier in the game where David Montgomery took a toss outside and then pitched the ball forward to Amon-Ra St. Brown for a gigantic gain. I've never seen that play before. Yeah. That's built off of an Andy Reid principle. And I think it was Tony Romo in the booth responded to it. And he was like, he's never seen that before. So this is a brand new play. So like, he's doing these really innovative things. So it does feel a little bit unfair to turn around and then go, oh, this trick play didn't work, so you're an idiot. But and I'm not saying Mick said that. But what I do feel was the timing of that call was crazy to me. You were 10 points down. You were in the fourth quarter. Jameson Williams, in terms of decision-making, he had already run for a 70-yard touchdown. And after that, he started humping the ground as his celebration, and his teammates had to run over and jump on him to try and hide it so he wouldn't get flagged. This is the kind of decision-making that you have with him that's consistently been there. This is the kind of guy you're turning to when you're 10 points down and in desperate need of a big play.
Yeah,
that's poor management.
You give him the ball in his hands and say, run fast and avoid the other guys. Don't do anything else. Like, you take away all the thought processes and you make him feel instinctive. Like, as a dynasty owner of Jameson Williams since the very start, I can attest to his poor decision making for multiple reasons. Not great at the old gambling, not great at the old drug taking, you know. So sometimes you want him just to, like,
sometimes good at the catching and running.
Very good. Find him in space and he'll beat almost anybody. Or
I would say he's probably a little bit too good at the drug taking, I would say.
Stick him on end around. I think if you're not good at it, though, so many of them are taking them and just are very good at it, and he obviously didn't read the instructions. Anyway, both his offensive and defensive coordinator are gone, right? That's what we expect. Dan Campbell is going to be on his own looking around.
Is Glenn definitely gone? There's like four or five jobs out there. I'd say he's definitely under serious consideration for one. And you have to imagine, the only reason that Johnson won't go is if he does what he did in the last 2 years and just decide that the move isn't right for him and, you know, decide to stay. If he does that, he's kind of going to get a reputation.
Yeah.
For, you know, teasing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that might cost him jobs in the future. So I'd say he kind of has to go this year.
So,
well, the discussion around him is that there are two primary options. It's return to Detroit and stay there, or it's the Raiders, which shocks me because I kind of wrote the Raiders off, and he apparently did it initially as well. And you have to wonder, after watching Jared Goff in this game and going up against Jaden Daniels, does he reassess that and go, look, I can get Aiden O'Connell to whatever level, I can get one of these free agent quarterbacks to whatever level, but I got this the most out of this guy I could possibly get, and then the biggest stage, it all fell apart. I don't really want to put myself through that over and over again, do I?
So, did it all fall apart? Because they scored 30-odd points. And if their defense doesn't have eight of their starters missing, and I know it's a big if because every year everybody's going to have loads of importance. And one year you might get lucky in that your four best players are all fine and then your replacement level players are not that bad, you know?
Yeah, they also had a 1-2 punch in Montgomery and Gibbs. And Montgomery was back last night, but he wasn't an option, really. He wasn't himself. He had that play that Keane's talking about. But when they were motoring. Now, that, again, is that going to be there in the playoffs? You have to have a next man up attitude as a coach. That's fine. But at the same time, they had created an offense that was probably good enough to win using Goff at his best. Not to say in spite of him, but with a limited Jared Goff influence, they probably had a team that's good enough to go and win a Super Bowl, and they got unlucky in the playoffs. But they also came across a team that I think we have to start taking more seriously, even outside of Jaden Daniels.
Now that they're one game away from the Super Bowl.
Well, like, yeah, absolutely. We're kind of talking about the journey and the fairy tale and so on. And now it's like, you know, they're in the semi-finals here.
A head coach who knows all about this.
Exactly, yeah.
The defense point is a great one, and kind of discussing the offense in the context of the overall scoreline. So the defense lost Carlton Davis very early in the game as well, which is massive, obviously because they've already lost loads of other people. But he's one of your starting cornerbacks, and you're going up against a team that has Terry McLaurin. Like, what you need to stop Washington is obviously Jaden Daniels, but shutting down Terry McLaurin puts you 50% of the way of winning the game because they don't have that much talent around them beyond him, Brian Robinson, and Daniels. Like, McLaurin then broke off that gigantic touchdown in the first half. But what I would say about the offensive point is, one, Jared Goff threw a pick six when the game was still competitive, so there's a significant give to the defense. And he also had that fumble early in the game. They were very unlucky in the sense that the bad plays came at the worst times. It was a third down or fourth down in field goal range. And Goff, they actually had a really good play call called, but Amon-Ra St. Brown slipped in his route over in the middle of the field. He was going to be wide open, and Goff was waiting for him to come open. Then he didn't come open, and he just tried to move and got caught from behind, and the ball came out. So the small margins, to a degree, went against him. And I know the turnovers are a big focal point, but even one or two of those plays early in the game goes, and it's a completely different direction for the rest of the game, I imagine. Which, look, that's kind of the point of the sport, though. Don't let things cascade when you have mistakes. When you do have big plays, build on them. And that's ultimately what good teams do, when the Lions didn't do it.
We probably won't talk about the Lions anymore this year, but if you're saying, Jared, that they've got those many players, I think the big names are all coming back. That's fine. Possibly two new coordinators. They also had 15 games indoors out of 17 this year. Their only two outdoor games were against the away games against the Packers and the Bears, which they will always have. Next year's schedule is very difficult. They've got they've got Washington for a start. They've got Kansas City. They've got all kinds of, most of their tough games are on the road, just the way it kind of, the rotation goes. They've got a very tough schedule and they're in a tough division. We'll see how Minnesota fight back, but you kind of feel like Green Bay will be a bit stronger. Chicago, we don't know. Chicago could be a Washington type. You know, they could be a couple of moves away from being competitive as well. So the window might not be closing in terms of the players, but the opportunity was there this year, probably, and that this was the height of it.
Like. Yeah, it gets harder every year. You don't get there, and the benefit of having got over the line is massive. The line is 5.5, opened at 4.5. The Eagles are 5.5-point favourites.
Is the weather? Jaden Daniels has done everything, so he's gone. He's the rookie who's gone. Won 14 games. He's won two games in the playoffs on the road, and now he has to go and do it in cold weather in the NFC Championship game. That's the next level. Every time it's like a test we haven't seen him do before, but he's passed every single one so far. I'd be wary. We didn't even do our picks this week. I'd be wary to pick against him.
And we're doing them live on air at the end of the show, Mick, of course. So we haven't given them in advance, but I figure we can figure out two games on the fly. Yeah, and look. It really comes, and I'm kind of repeating myself here, it really comes down to how they handle that defensive line. And the reason they can feel more confident about it than the Rams did is they have that ability to move the point of attack over and over again. What you'd have seen last night is Jaden Daniels ran quite a bit, did a bunch of scrambling. But whenever he's doing that, you've got Brian Robinson running up the middle. And if you've got that action in the backfield where Brian Robinson is the threat right behind the center and guard, and you've got Daniels the threat going outside, suddenly all of those defensive linemen have to move left and right more before they can move forward. And they also have to figure out where the ball is. That moment of hesitation is gigantic for a quarterback because it just puts you on the front foot. I think these teams, like, they know each other really, really closely, know each other really, really well. You mentioned earlier about it being an all NFC East championship. That's like, this is the NFL's dream. They love putting the NFC East on primetime. And over the years, it's something that's made all of us roll our eyes because we've been forced to watch terrible football teams over and over again. But this is definitely not going to be the case. I actually think this is going to be a really fun, really fascinating matchup just because you have such a gigantic gap at quarterback, but then it's very, very clear which defense is better, which offense supporting cast is better, and that's all going to be the home side in Philadelphia. So, but the one thing we have to mention too, the Washington defense has been much better over the stretch. Like, I know they're giving up points, but it's kind of inevitable that you give up points against these offenses. What you have to do is you have to win those turnovers, you have to win the situational play calling, which is what they've done. Now, how they match up to the Eagles will be completely different to how they match up to the Lions. But the defensive front there, the secondary, none of them are superstars for the most part, but they're all playing their assignments fairly well. And I don't think Jalen Hurts will get anything as easily as he got last week at the start of the game, which kind of kicked them forward against the Rams. Like, the Rams have a couple of nice rookies and a couple of good players all around, but they wouldn't have the overall quality, I don't think, that Washington has, which should make it a closer game.
I think years when, away teams go on the road through the playoff six seeds, as Washington are a six seed, you know, the momentum, it takes on a life of its own. It really does. They've won their last five regular season games. So that's seven wins in
a
row.
Did they lose four in a row before that?
Lost four in a row before that. Then they came back.
They've worked him out.
Yeah, and he was injured at the time as well.
Sure, some great cold takes.
Exactly, yeah. So, they've won five regular season games in a row, two road playoff games in a row. It's an unbelievable journey that they're on. And then you kind of think, right, well, what could hold that back? Well, maybe it's the fact that, you know, it's a first-year head coach. It's a team that doesn't have that much kind of experience, certainly together, and it's a rookie quarterback, but it's a first year head coach that's been to the play, that's been to the Super Bowl before. It's and should have won the Super Bowl, you know. Like, it might have been his fault that they didn't, but at the same time, he still needed a lot to go wrong for them not to win it. And you've got a rookie quarterback who's not playing anywhere like a rookie. You know, he's older. He's also just got all the poise and everything else in the world. So all the things that would make you think twice about Washington are all gone. So it's almost momentum versus probably all-round talent, which, you know, we shouldn't write off the Eagles. Obviously, they won the game last night. They've been a very, very good team all the way through the season. It's so hard to pick. It really is.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to keep going against Washington. They just went into the number one seed and won by 15 points.
It does feel like it's a Saquon Barkley season, that he's going to be annoyed forever, and all of the football writers will be annoyed that actually, it turns out he was the MVP of the season. Oh, we missed that, didn't we? When he smashes his way through the next two games. Okay, so is everybody picking now? Are you going to pick now?
Go on, you first.
Yeah, sure.
You'd have to say the Eagles are favourites, right? But having stupidly not changed my pick last week, I'm going to go and I'm going to ride Jaden Daniels' train all the way, choo-choo, to wherever the Super Bowl is. I've completely forgotten. New Orleans?
Yeah. Yep.
It's usually in New Orleans or Jacksonville.
Go on, pick.
Go on.
Oh, sorry, I thought Mick was going. No, I am going to stay in the Commanders, and part of my reasoning is I just want them to win at this stage. These other three teams are so conservative and they're strangling. We'll get into it when we talk about the next couple of games, but they're strangling the life out of me watching them, whereas the Commanders are just extremely fun. And you got to give, look, as much as I hate on Cliff Kingsbury and complain about him every single week when I get a chance, Dan Quinn there as a head coach, second time head coach, a guy who previously failed in Atlanta, I think it was previously Seattle defensive coordinator. He's someone who was pigeonholed as a conservative defensive coach. He's got an offense now where he's going for it and fourth down all the time. Well, not all the time, but he's going for it and fourth down when it makes sense to. So give him a lot of credit for developing and evolving as a coach. An important thing to know, to think about at this time of the year when teams are hiring second opportunity head coaches, like someone like Mike Vrabel in New England comes to mind.
Yeah.
All right.
Fail is a strong word for what he did at Atlanta. Fair enough. Like, I suppose if you're not first, you're last. I'm going to have to go with the Eagles, I suppose. I think the fact that you both went for the Commanders is just messing me up a little bit here. I think it would be weird for the three of us to go for the fairy tale underdog. Yeah, I think
don't be bullied, Mick. You do what you want. You be you.
The home advantage, the Saquon element, the fact that we saw so much of Jalen Carter just being an absolute beast, the other side of the ball, Saquon, yesterday. I think that's probably enough for me. I think they'll just about get the job done. Wouldn't feel too strongly about it, though.
No, and hopefully it's a good game. Is the weather going to be exactly the same as it was? Do we know? I have to assume
you don't
the
see
snow
that
comes
snow,
and then it leaves.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. Right. Well, let's just get to the pain of Mark Andrews. Ultimately, the game doesn't come down to one single incident. But it does.
Maybe two. Two Mark Andrews incidents.
It's just like...
Yeah.
There's brilliant. The camera work in the NFL is just genuinely better and better and better season on season. There's the pylon camera, which used to be kind of black and white, like hand-drawn, looked like it was so bad. But now the HD is so amazing. You can just see the greasiness and the heartbreak and the pain.
The shots.
The Bills are looking over at him going, they can't believe it. There's no, it takes ages for the celebration to start.
Yeah.
Like the ball is clearly gone and they're like, he couldn't have dropped that. He's just, I can't celebrate this.
Was it that easy? Am I in the minority here?
He
was also falling at the time backwards.
Yeah,
but
he's got one job.
I completely agree. He should have caught it. I just don't know if it was
I don't think it was easy.
Bananas, as everyone suggests.
Well, it's such. The drama is incredible.
Oh, it was unreal.
You mentioned the shots afterwards of him on the sideline capturing his face every time as well was like one of those almost drama, like TV show kind of a thing rather than an NFL football game or a sports event. Was it easy? So I think you probably say it is. The reason for that is Andrews should expect the ball to be thrown behind him in that scenario because Lamar is trying to avoid leading him over the sideline, so he goes out of bounds. He's wide open. The ball isn't in his hands. It's actually kind of a little bit above, so he doesn't have to reach down and catch it by his feet. He can actually catch it more into his body. this kind of comes back to, and look, I know he hasn't had a drop since week six, apparently, this season, but Mark Andrews in his career has been someone who has always dropped balls, and he's always done it in spurts. So he will have games where he drops four passes, then he'll go 8 weeks without dropping a ball. The problem is this kind of thing always comes about. He had two drops in this game, both of them were fairly big, and he had that fumble. Look, we can pile on him. There's no need to pile on him. He knows how bad he was. He knows that he essentially cost them the opportunity to tie the game. It wasn't a game winner. There was still 90 seconds left on the clock, so it definitely wasn't. Oh, the Ravens certainly have won if he had caught it. The other aspect of it as well, like, look, Lamar's obviously not going to point to Mark Andrews and blame Mark Andrews. Lamar Jackson had two awful, awful plays in that game, and this has been a theme with him in the playoffs. And prior to this year, I probably would have rolled my eyes at it a little bit, but the mistakes do come more. And he's talked about it now. He said he gets a little bit angsty. He gets a bit too worked up, too excited for it. And that's something he's going to have to figure out, because that first interception is awful, and the fumble is an absolute joke. I know you're an incredibly creative football player, and you can escape most things, but the way you're carrying the ball in that scenario, in that weather, you've got to be better. You've got to have better awareness there. You've got to be smarter there. And that ultimately set them on the back foot and set them going the wrong direction. Like, the Bills, like, can you guys even remember a big play for the Bills offense? It was so methodical. It was so playing within themselves. They basically just relied on the Ravens to beat themselves for the most part.
How do you fix that with Lamar, do you think?
No, I was just wondering the same thing, because, like, it's not as if he did... He had bad plays, but it wasn't as if the rest of the time he played badly. You always wonder how that works. You know, it's like, I'd love to get almost a psychological or even just like an analytical breakdown of how that works when the so-called bottle jobs happen, because surely if you're bottling it, if your nerve is gone, then it's kind of happening all the time and you can't do the brilliant things that he is doing the rest of the time.
Or even the basics.
So it's just strange to me. It's strange to me. And I wonder, is it overblown? Because to be honest, it's not as if he's like a completely mistake-free quarterback. The conditions... We haven't other than talking about the snow ruining the first game, we haven't really talked about the fact that, like, how difficult that is on players. And, like, it's not a straightforward thing to play in that kind of conditions. We think of them as computer game characters rather than human beings. There's going to be mistakes in that sort of... And for all the Bills, maybe they did conservatively, you know, that's good game planning, because that's what you have to do in those conditions. And that'll probably, you know, who had the least turnovers in the games we're talking about, it's the teams that won, other than... You know, we'll get to the Kansas City Texans and later, but that was a different kind of turnovers that the Texans were getting. But generally, you win the turnover battle, you win the game in those conditions. So it's like, I'm wary of suggesting that it happening 3-4 times is actually any more than a coincidence. Do you know, like, as in, like, they lost to the Bills, they lost to a team on their level, a quarterback on or close to his level, away from home, in terrible conditions, by 2 points because the tight end dropped the 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
Like, the margins are so, so fine. If they get that, they win in overtime, we're not talking about those two Lamar mistakes.
The difficulty is that the evidence is that in these games, he doesn't perform above expectation.
Yeah. He hasn't had one of those big playoff games where he grabs it by the scruff of the neck and kind of goes to that next level. And until he does, he'll always be marked down. That's fair.
You can't in any way compare everybody against Michael Jordan. But there was the Michael Jordan documentary on the other night where there was just a clip of, it's his rookie season, isn't it, where he brings him to the playoffs and they get beaten by the Pistons? Or is it the second season? I think it's the rookie season.
I'm not sure, yeah.
Very early on anyway. And there's just a period where the team keeps getting beaten and he puts up triple double as an average in 10 games in a row, and you're like, that's you know. And there's a bit where he's going to have to do something in some of these games. I guess I don't really remember, because I wasn't really around talking about American football at the time, but when Peyton Manning was failing to get over the line, people had doubts, and I think it's fair enough to have doubts. It's like, does he have the killer instinct to get over the line? And then it turned out he did, you know.
Yeah. And got the Bears in the Super Bowl. No, but that, look, to be honest, Peyton Manning's defining game in his entire career was when he came back from 20 points down against the Patriots in the snow in 06 in Foxborough. You know what I mean? When, maybe it wasn't in the snow. Maybe I'm confusing games. I think that was actually in Indy. But actually, they came back from behind and the Patriots had the game taken and Manning turned it on. And it was a defining playoff game against the Patriots for sure. And it was probably the one that sort of set up his career, and people kind of forgot about the he can't get the job done in the playoffs. But yeah, until you have it, we don't know it's there. Yeah.
And maybe nonsense, but it's a real thing.
Like, the easy argument here is just watch the drive he needed at the end to get them back in the game. He was phenomenal. And watch the drive up until Mark Andrews fumbles. He made phenomenal plays there too. So it's not like that. That's why this discussion is kind of fascinating, because you started off kind of trying to understand it and how do you fix it. And that's where it is difficult, because he's doing this stuff in big moments, but these just mistakes just happen as well for whatever reason. I'm not really concerned about him. I think, like, he's got 7 more years, I guess, playing at this level in for one of the franchises that's very well run. He's got 7 more shots to turn this around. Like, Tony Romo and Peyton Manning are the two comparisons right now, guys who everyone, well, anyone who watched football with an analysis scope recognized and understood just how good they were as players and how incredibly talented they were and how consistent they were. And then you get to the small sample of the playoffs and these small moments define you. Romo has the fumbled snap on the field goal, and that's defined his whole career. I think, to be honest with you, I think that's part of the reason he retired earlier than he was supposed to. And then Manning has all the issues in Indianapolis, and then he eventually gets over the hill and then gets a second one in Denver, ironically, when he probably shouldn't have got one because he was an anchor on that team more than anything. So Lamar's got a long way left in his career. Josh Allen on the other side of this as well, like, he's in a similar boat because he's still got to get past Mahomes, and Mahomes is kind of ruining all of these people right now because nobody can get past him.
So you think there's not much excitement about this game versus the other game, for example, because we just expect Patrick Mahomes to come out and win the game 21-19, 23-20?
Do you think there's no excitement about it? God, I don't know. This rivalry, and it's kind of Kilkenny tip in that, like, Kilkenny keep winning, but the Bills are always there. And they're always, there's sob stories along the way, and like, they beat them in the regular season, like Tip beating Kilkenny in the league final, you know, and maybe this could be 2010. You know, I'd be very excited about it.
A blowout win.
What?
A blowout win. 41-20.
Well, we don't need to get into the Chiefs and Texans in too much detail, right? But there was Adam Schefter put up a stat that was very, very interesting. About the Texans' performance, right, which was that they were the first team in NFL postseason history to outgain their opponent by 100 yards, have 0 turnovers, and lose. 49-0 teams were in such occasions before that, right? That's an unbelievable stat, but it also, like, they were sacked 7 times, so it was actually the Chiefs' defense that won the game. But the offense, CJ Stroud got more than 100 yards on them extra in the game in Kansas City in the cold. They're not firing on all cylinders. They do look like they can get it done when they need to get it done, but you think of, like, I'm sorry, with all due respect to the Texans and to CJ Stroud, the form that Josh Allen has been in, and even the Bills in general this year, it's a very different kettle of fish coming in next Sunday. So they have to up their game. And there does feel like that 06 game I just mentioned with the Patriots and the Colts, one of the defining things about the Patriots dynasty was that they had ups and downs in terms of talent level on their, you know, on offense especially. And, you know, there was a time in kind of 05, 06 when it was at a down level. And they just, actually, the defining thing when you look back over a 20-year period is that they kept getting to AFC Championship games. But on those years when they weren't good enough, the AFC Championship game was as far as they went.
Yeah,
they didn't keep going. They didn't get to the Super Bowl. They didn't win the Super Bowl. They were for the years when everything was kind of clicking, you know. So it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I wonder if the Chiefs are in a down year. I do. And what's so brilliant about Reed and Mahomes is that they're still able to get there as a number one seed into the AFC Championship game. But it might be a bridge too far. I'm probably going to pick them, but it's... that's needling me. It is. That kind of example is needling at me.
The Bills are 1.5-point underdogs, which, obviously, I know they've changed, the home advantage isn't worth 3 points anymore. It's worth a little bit less. But on a neutral field, the Bills will be favourites in this game. But it's not a neutral field. That home advantage does seem to count for something. And it does seem to. I find it very hard to pick against Kansas until they've been beaten, and then I will pick against them all the time.
I think that's
just
where
to annoy
I'm
them.
Fall down on. I think until they lose, you have to trust them.
Were there some egregious refereeing issues in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs in this game?
Was there what?
So, like, I I have access to a fan base that has many tinfoil hats on, having watched many Chiefs games against the Niners in history. And you're generally like, it's not that bad. And then you're like, why would there be a conspiracy in favor of Kansas? But I don't know. It seems like everybody...
Well, Patrick Mahomes is the superstar of the NFL. He is the guy. It's not necessarily where he plays. And, you know, there's possibly the most famous person in the world turns up to all their games and sits in the luxury box beside Caitlin Clark. And, you know, there's a big industry around the Chiefs.
Yeah, keep on TV.
I don't think it's a conspiracy, but my God, he gets calls. Like, I mean, they're afraid of Patrick Mahomes getting hurt, I think is probably the thing. So there was one non-helmet-to-helmet by Will Anderson that was called as a roughing the passer. They can't review that, but it was just such a weak call. But there was loads of them. And they were all in the kind of a short enough period of real time. I don't know where it was in the game, but it was absolutely shocking. And I'm someone that thinks that stuff is nonsense. I like the Chiefs generally. Actually, I'm rarely rooting totally against them. So it's not as if I'm looking for the calls. I generally, when Twitter and all is going mad, I'm kind of saying, it's not. It's just, it was a 50-50 call they got wrong or whatever. On Saturday night, it was constant. There was about five of them. And it felt very, what the hell is going on here?
And the other part of this as well, and I 100% agree with everything Mick said there, so I don't have a huge amount to add. Mahomes is now looking for calls as well. He's flopping and doing all that kind of stuff, which is really bothering people because, like, obviously they're disliked because they're winners, and that happens when you win multiple Super Bowls. You become the team that everyone's trying to beat, and that's natural. But Mahomes himself has always been kind of, not beloved, but... he's been liked because of the way he goes about his business. He's not someone who the general NFL fan is like, oh, I hate that guy. I don't want to listen to that guy. I want to see that guy. He's generally liked, but when he's doing this stuff, it's part of the general issue of this matchup coming back again to me. Look, I kind of said beforehand, before we started, I think there's a lack of excitement about this game. And I'm saying that from my own perspective to a degree, but it's more so the people I'm talking to who are NFL fans and people who cover the league. And everyone's kind of going... it's not that it's the same matchup again. It's that you've got two incredibly talented quarterbacks, yet you've got two offenses that are all about ball control and being cautious and playing careful and trying to win a low-scoring game. Now, I'm not sure how we've got to this point. Like, I do know because obviously there's been issues in getting weapons in and the way they've built the teams and obviously salary cap and all that kind of stuff, all the stuff we don't need to get into. But at this point in Patrick Mahomes' career and at this point in Josh Allen's career, we accepted them too to be like, throwing the ball constantly everywhere, have a bunch of wide receivers outside. Back when it was Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and even Drew Brees and Philip Rivers, they had all these weapons and they were trying to win the game by throwing the ball, by spreading the defense out and attacking them over and over again. We're going to spend next week watching Josh Allen do his 4th-and-1, the quarterback sneaks. We're going to watch James Cook carry the ball a lot. We're going to watch Patrick Mahomes drop back and look to throw, but how often is he going to throw the ball 15 yards downfield? Josh Allen last week, they put up a graphic at one point. He had 10 pass attempts, 8 completions in the 10 for 36 yards. He was throwing the ball 3 yards downfield over and over again. This is a guy who can go on his knees and throw the ball 70 yards in the air without losing any velocity. Like, it's such a contradiction in who the quarterbacks are and how this game is going to be pitched. So that's Allen versus Mahomes. When realistically, Allen and Mahomes are not exactly Alex Smith levels, but they're definitely playing as game managers right now.
It's interesting. I guess that's just because the data tells them every time you pass it long, you're 42% more likely to lose the ball, blah, 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 go the short, we'll control the game. And the teams have been built that way.
There's probably a lot of elements to that, but it also might just be a perfect kind of situation of right now they just don't have the wide receiver talent. Like without Rasheed Rice, without Stephon Diggs leaving last year,
they haven't been drafted.
Maybe it's a situation like 12 months from now, but I also kind of said this last year with the Chiefs, but maybe it's a situation of 12 months from now when Khalil Shakir and Amari Cooper are there for a full season in Buffalo, when Rashee Rice and whoever else they add in the offseason is there as wide receivers in Kansas City. Maybe it starts to open up again. Like that's who Andy Reid is by personality and by character, at least. Sean McDermott's not that guy, so you would expect the Chiefs to go back in that direction, but also maybe they just go running with what works. I don't know. It's probably a great testament to them as winners trainers and as coaches that they adapt to what they've got and they'll win the game in whatever way they can. But we're one step away from Gaelic football where one team is just holding the ball forever and waiting for a chance rather than actually trying to play something that's somewhat entertaining and fun to watch, which is part of the kind of dampening of this game, I guess. Look, there's still two gigantic teams. There's still legacy aspects coming on here. We will probably get lots of drama because it should be a very close game. And there's so many storylines with it. It'll still be something definitely worth watching. But it's just, I just feel like it could be something else than what it is.
Yeah, not having a left guard play at left tackle would be a good start for the Chiefs in terms of giving Mahomes a little bit more time. But it's unfortunate the way it is. We should mention as well, like for me being negative about the Chiefs offense, in their moments, they were still good. It was Kelce's best game since the Super Bowl. He was very, very good, over 100 yards. Mahomes' touchdown to Kelce was like one of those things where we're used to seeing it from Patrick Mahomes, so nobody even mentions it. It was basically like a Michael Bradley diving pass from the 1980s, except forward, and somehow being able to throw overhand as well, perfectly into the chest of the tight end in the end zone. So like they still have their moments. It's just, yeah, it just doesn't feel fluid at all at the moment. It's just all very... You know, you're expecting a three and out is as likely, I suppose, as a touchdown drive.
You're picking the Chiefs.
I suppose I have to just go with history, yeah. Three Super Bowls in a row. Chiefs and Eagles Super Bowl for the second time in 3 years.
I'm picking the Chiefs until I'm wrong and after picking them, because at this point you can't. But it'll really test my reserves if Jaden Daniels makes a Super Bowl against the Chiefs, because then, like, it's my two loves going against each other, essentially.
And just remind me what happened. Did Hurst get injured early in that game? It was close enough.
Did I Stroud?
No, in the Super Bowl two years ago.
I already watched it recently.
I find it struggle to remember a game from three weeks ago, so I'm not used to it.
I think the Chiefs pulled away in the fourth quarter, didn't they?
Sorry, no, I do remember that game. Sorry, Hurts made a lot of plays, 35. Actually. Yes, Hurts played very well. Hurts played very well, but it was also a situation where Hurts brought them back and he was always chasing Mahomes. That was the one where Tyreek Hill had the big play downfield as well, was it? Or was that the more recent one? Either way, it was a situation. That's the thing, they've had too many Super Bowls.
This was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So the Eagles had it off.
Okay, so it's not.
Kadarius Toney played well.
Yes.
They had back-to-back touchdowns.
That would be kind of a similar game, I think, again, because it was an offense for the Chiefs that wasn't at its peak. They were kind of getting what they could from guys they brought in during the season and guys who were just there already. It wasn't like the stars of the teams that they had previously.
Harrison Bucker won it with a kick to make it 38-35. So I've got something in my head about some really bad decision that went in favor of the Chiefs that night as well.
Could be any game.
No, there was a massive penalty. Remember, there was some...
I'm going to go look this up.
Yeah, there was definitely something weird. I was like, hang on a second. That's fishy. And sure, look, it went the way of the Chiefs.
A fourth down that went away and then a really late, like, roughing the passer call or something like that? Yeah, yeah. Hold on a second. This drive's over. Flag. Someone draw a flag. We'll figure it out after.
Right.
One thing before we go. I just feel partly responsible if any Baltimore Ravens fans are out there. I think we said here 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the Houston Texans. And I said the key, and I was like, what CJ Stroud needs now is that he just doesn't have that kind of comfort blanket that Mark Andrews, for example, you know, provides. And it was like, you know, that's what CJ Stroud needs is Mark Andrews. And Mark Andrews as a comfort blanket. Don't think he'll ever be seen that way again.
Yeah. All right. That's this week. I mean, you take Mark Andrews all day and twice again on Sunday. It's just that, it's just like,
Well, all we can say is mistake-free football won out over the weekend, and we can all say this was a mistake-free podcast.
There you go. See you next week, folks.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.